Young people born in the mid-1990s and on are the first generation to spend their entire adolescence in the age of the smartphone. As our next guest writes, they likely had an Instagram page before they started high school and don't remember a time before the internet. But how has that access to technology affected their lives, and what does that mean for their future and ours? Jean Twenge is a professor of psychology at San Diego State University. Her new book is called iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Jean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Let's start off with that term, iGen. Talk about who these people are, what this generation is.
Yeah, so it's iGen with a little I, like iPods and iPhones. About two-thirds or so of teens today own not just a smartphone, but actually an iPhone. So it's a label that makes a lot of sense. Some people have called this group Gen Z, but if the millennials just before them are not Gen Y, Gen Z doesn't make a lot of sense. So iGen is those born roughly between 1995 and 2012.
And you really focus on the role of that technology, the impact that having access to social media, the internet, from a very early age has on people. Why is that such a key factor?
Well, iGen is really the first generation to spend their teen years with smartphones. So by most surveys, the average teen spends 6 to 8 hours a day with a screen. If you include TV, it goes up to almost 10. So that's just in leisure time. That has had a really big effect on the rest of their lives. It really has ripple effects on how they socialize and their mental health and so on. So for one thing, teens are communicating with their friends so much through their phones that they're spending less time with their friends in person across no matter what you ask about, whether it's just hanging out with friends, going to parties, going to the mall, going to the movies. iGen teens do those things less often than teens did just 10 years ago.
And you write that this isn't all bad. A lot of times when people talk about a new generation, it's what's wrong with insert name of generation here. You see positives and negatives.
Yeah, you know, I think when you think about generations and cultural change overall, it is very tempting for people to see things in terms of, oh, yeah, what's wrong with them, or let's criticize them, or whose fault is it? But you really miss the big picture when you do that, because, of course, there's some changes that are good, some that are bad, some that are neither one. So it really makes a lot of sense to try to see the whole picture. So as just one example, yes, teens are spending a lot of time on their phones and less time with people in person. That's probably not the best trend, but they're also physically safer, and they're more concerned with safety. They're probably the safest generation in American history. The homicide rate for young people is very low. They don't fight physically with each other as much as previous generations did. They're better drivers and get in fewer accidents. So there's a lot of positive trends with this group as well.
One of the most worrisome things, though, and I think about this as a parent of kids in this generation, you write that on the whole, they seem to be less happy than previous generations were at the same age. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so I've been doing this work looking at generational differences for about 25 years, and I keep an eye on these really large national surveys that are done of teens every year. Right around 2012, I started to see a spike in teens reporting symptoms of depression. And other surveys started to see this too. Big increases in the level of clinical level depression. The suicide rate started to go up. Teens became more likely to say that they felt lonely and left out. And then a year or two later, happiness started to slide and life satisfaction. So all of these signs of teens are telling us that they're not particularly happy. And that happened right around the same time that the percentage of Americans with a smartphone crossed 50%. Of course, it's hard to say that one causes the other, but it's an awfully suspicious pattern.
But you lay out research on a number of behaviors and their link with happiness. and we see increases in the ones that you say tend to make us less happy, more time online, more time on social media, and at the same time decreases in communal activities, whether that's going out and playing a sport with other people or hanging out with friends or going to parties or going to church, you name it. We're doing more of the unhappy stuff and less of the stuff that makes us happy.
Yeah, so that's one of the other great things about these surveys of thousands and thousands of teens is they're asked not just if they're happy, but how they spend their time. And if you look at those correlations, pretty much everything you would do with a screen, whether that's TV or these newer activities like texting, social media, being online, those correlate with being more unhappy. Pretty much anything you do that's not on a screen that a teen would do with his or her leisure time, like hanging out with their friends, joining religious services, sports and exercise, sleep, all of those things are connected to more happiness. So, of course, that's correlational. So it's possible, say, that unhappy teens are more likely to spend more time on screens and less time with people in person. But there's a couple studies that more or less rule out that explanation. Two, for example, follow people over time and found that more social media use led to more unhappiness, so more unhappiness didn't lead to more social media use.
Talking to Jean Twenge. Her new book is called iGen. It looks at the generation of people born starting in the mid-1990s, their relationship to technology, how it's changing their lives. You also write, it's in the title of the book, and you've got a chapter on it, people in this generation tend to be more tolerant. What do we know about that, and why is that?
Yeah, so if you look at iGen teens and young adults today compared to teens, say, 20 years ago, so say Gen Xers, you really see a pronounced pattern that young people today are more likely to, say, be supportive of mothers working. They're more likely to say that they want to support rights based on race and gender and sexual orientation. Sexual orientation in particular has a very pronounced generational shift that still exists today, because on a lot of these attitudes, older people have changed too, and attitudes around sexual orientation are no exception to that. But that's where iGen and younger millennials just before them really stand out, that there's still a pronounced generation gap when it comes to issues like same-sex marriage. And a lot of iGeners won't even remember a time before same-sex marriage was legal. They take sexual orientation for granted. They say that they believe people should be who they are. And for them, that's kind of a bedrock sense of equality that they really take for granted.
One thing you write that struck me was that in studying previous generations, you see changes usually happening slowly and gradually over time. And this one seems different. You see, and a lot of the charts in your books look like this. There's this gradual trend, and all of a sudden, boom, the bottom falls out of whatever the measure is. What do you make of that, the suddenness of the change in so many different categories?
Yeah, I had never seen that before, really. So take this data, goes from boomers to Gen Xers to millennials. There were certainly generational changes, but they tended to happen over the course of 5 years or 10 years, and they would keep building. But yeah, with iGen, right around those born about 1995, so those who are about 17 in 2012, there's these sudden breaks. Those trends toward not spending as much time with your friends, those millennials started, but then there's a really sharp drop-off around that time. And with mental health, at least on some measures, millennials were showing downward trends too. But with iGen, all of them end up going in the same direction very suddenly, right around 2011 or 2012.
When I see generational research, I always wonder, I know these are averages, these are trends, but do the same rules apply for people, say, rich and poor, urban, rural, by different races, things like that? Looking at this iGen generation, how do you sort that out?
Yeah, so for the most part, these trends that we're discussing show up among teens of every background, every region of the country, different socioeconomic status, whether they're advantaged or disadvantaged, race and ethnicity, gender. Most of these trends appear across all of those groups. Now, there's a couple of notable exceptions. The mental health trends are negative for both boys and girls, but they're much more negative for girls. The trend line is much more pronounced for girls suffering more than boys. And then in terms of religion, which is one of the other things that I looked at, the trends for black teens are not as stark. They haven't changed as much as, say, white teens in their religious affiliation and beliefs.
One thing I should point out is your book isn't just about survey data. You actually interviewed a bunch of people in this generational group. And it's interesting, you know, we think of kids attached to their screens, and they are, but they feel really ambivalent about it, it sounds like, when you actually talk to them.
Yeah, so that's what's interesting, because, of course, you know, the bedrock of the conclusions is these surveys of, you know, 11 million young people, nationally representative, and so on. But they only ask certain questions, and they can't always get really in-depth. So I tried to get more in-depth with some open-ended questions from some surveys and with, you know, really in-depth interviews with about 25 of them, either face-to-face or on the phone. And that was something that surprised me, was the number of young people said, no, we actually really would rather be with our friends in person. And it just is so much more emotionally fulfilling, which, of course, is the research completely backs them up. And even, say, one 13-year-old who I talked to, who's literally never known not only a world without the Internet, but can't remember a time before there were smartphones. And she completely saw the downsides of this approach. She talked about her drama teacher telling them, we're going to put our phones away so we can look people in the eye. She told me about it when a friend of hers, when they were hanging out, her friend was looking at her phone and how that hurt, that her friend wasn't paying attention to her and was looking at the screen. So it was very interesting to me that teens, even young ones, they see the downsides of this. It's just that social media and those phones, they feel mandatory to them, and they're also addictive. That's a whole other piece we haven't talked about.
We'll get into that. We're talking with Gene Twenge, author of iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. She says there's a big generational shift with young people born starting in the mid-1990s, a lot of it involved with that attachment to various kinds of digital devices. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you are in this generation, people born in the mid-90s or later, we'd especially love to hear from you. How has technology shaped your life? Do you love it, hate it, you're attached to it, but wish you could spend less time on it? Do you spend time, real time, in person with other people and people of other generations, maybe parents and grandparents? What differences do you see between your generation and that of younger people? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now about technology and its impact on the lives of young people. Gene Twenge is with us. Her new book is called iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Are you a member of this iGen, the generation born starting in the mid-90s? How do you think the members of iGen differ from previous generations? How do you think this generation of young people will shape our culture? What do you think of the technology that they've grown up with, that you've grown up with? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Kelly is on the line in Madison. Kelly, hi.
Hi. I'm the mother of three teenagers, and I think that they are exposed to so much more of what is going on in the world, so they are so much more aware of things that are going on than our generation was, and they see a lot of the really terrible things that are happening, and they really don't understand why there's problems like there are. And, you know, like racism and problems with, you know, LGBT and all of that. Because for them, they are taking that for granted because that's the way it's always been. I'm always talking to them about women's rights because in my lifetime, women did have problems, a lot of sexist stuff. And they just don't understand that because they don't think that's the way it should be.
Kelly, thanks for calling in. That connection between exposure to a lot of bad news, Gene, and unhappiness. I mean, as a grown-up, I feel that. And so what's it like for kids growing up with that constant exposure to whatever the news is, however bad it might be?
Well, you know, based on these surveys and the teens that I talk to, that doesn't seem to be the average experience. Teens today are actually a little less interested in following the news. They're less interested in government and in social issues, say especially than boomers were in the 70s, but even a little less than Gen Xers were. In the interviews that I did, when I asked teens, you know, what do you do online, it was almost always communicating with friends, entertainment. Several of them didn't even know that there was such a thing as Google News or Apple News. That was a surprise to them. So, and that fits what the national surveys show, which is that's not the primary thing that they're doing on their phones. The vast majority of it is communication and entertainment.
Kelly, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nick in West Allis. Nick, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Nick?
So I have a bachelor's of science in computer science and a minor in information technology. I was born in 1993 and I'm a recent graduate. So my experience throughout my life is that people didn't really understand my interest in technology. And, you know, they always thought of me as like the computer guy and I could help them with all their computer needs. And it was a unique position within my family. And I felt like that it was really beneficial for me to kind of learn how to figure out problems and use technology in my own way to help other people around me. And it gave me an opportunity, as well as creating groups and social groups. I have a YouTube channel that I stream to where I am with a community of people that I help affect their lives in a positive way. So me growing up with technology has given me that opportunity, whereas if I didn't have it, I might not know that that possibility can exist to help people.
Nick, thanks a lot for the call. Nick, right on the cusp of iGen, it sounds like, Gene, but does his story sound familiar?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm glad he brought up some of the many advantages of these technologies, that they really do keep us connected, that you can find people who are interested in the things that you're interested in. There's a lot of big advantages to this technology, and it kind of echoes some of the research findings that the teens who are not connected using technology at all, they're not actually particularly happy. The sweet spot for happiness is moderate use, so up to about 2 hours or so a day is actually beneficial. After that, that's when you start to get more unhappiness, more of these mental health effects. So the solution isn't to yank the phone out of, you know, every teen's hand, especially the older ones. It's to limit the amount of use. And I think that's excellent advice for adults as well. Yeah, you know, use these technologies for what they're great for, but try not to get addicted and try to have it not be something that is a compulsion and, you know, in your hand 6 to 8 hours a day like the average is for teens.
Nick, thanks for that call. We're talking to Jean Twenge. Her new book is iGen. It's about the younger generation and their connection to technology for better and for worse. Back to your calls now with Rose on the line in Milwaukee. Rose, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Rose?
Well, I was born in 1990, and I remember growing up in a world where we knew how to be bored. We weren't outside with, I mean, we had Game Boys, we had video games, but the internet, you know, dial-up, all that came around when I was in high school. So I guess my main concern is, you know, we don't know how to communicate face-to-face. We don't remember a lot of things, and we rely on our cell phones for learning. There's a lot that I don't retain anymore. I don't know my friends' phone numbers. I'm trying to build up my vocabulary.
Rose, your line's breaking up a little bit there, but a lot of points there. Gene, I want to get to that point you mentioned about forgetting how to communicate face-to-face. That is a concern you raise in the book.
It is, and we really need a lot more research on this because that's one of the main worries people have right now. Social skills get better with practice, and iGen is having less practice because they're spending less time with their friends face to face. So they may be developing, you know, knowledge about the right emoji to use, but maybe not the right facial expression. So we really do need to find out if that is the case, if their social skills have been affected. There's one small study that suggests maybe it will be. It took sixth graders, and half of them went to a screen-free camp for 5 days, and the other half didn't. And those who went to the screen-free camp improved their ability to read emotions on others' faces more than those who didn't go to the camp. So that we need more of those studies, so that points in the direction of some potential issues around social skills.
Rose, thanks for that call. As we start to wrap up, Jean, one solution you offer for parents is, hey, put off that phone as long as you can, make it a dumber phone as long as you can. But I wonder about media literacy. You mentioned the concept that, you know, these sites, the social media, it's built with the intention of being addictive. Do kids need to be brought up knowing that, hey, these sites are not charities there for your benefit, they're making money off of your attention?
I think that's a great message for kids to understand that, yeah, these social media companies, they make more money the longer people are on them, and that, you know, their main purpose is advertising, that's really what they're there for. And it really is an issue of moderation, that if they want to set up things with their friends using a social media site, maybe they can do it on a laptop or a desktop. It doesn't necessarily have to be on a phone with no restrictions. So the average age for getting a smartphone these days is 10. And I think it would be much better if we waited longer than that until kids were a little more emotionally ready and able to handle that potentially addicting nature of the smartphone.
Jean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jean Twenge. She's the author of the new book, iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. She joins us to talk about what she calls the iGen generation, people born after the mid-90s, how they differ from previous generations, how they'll change our culture. Still time for you to share your thoughts, by the way. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page, whatever device you might happen to be on. Let us know if this is you, if you're one of the iGen generation. What do you think about what our guest had to say?